Welcome to the Humanergy Leadership Podcast. My name is David Wheatley. We're here to talk leadership in small, bite-sized, and practical chunks. Enjoy.
So this is another of our first Friday work sessions recorded and then shared with you in the podcast. This time, Corey Fernandez talks about stakeholder mapping and how it can help you see the interconnectedness of the relationships around you and identify what is the greater good. So if you're interested in the first Friday sessions, first Friday of every month, that you can register to come and join us at noon Eastern time on Zoom for a great leadership conversation with some people that are just there to learn and share and have some good leadership conversation over lunchtime Eastern time. Go to humanergy.com to register. Here's Corey.
Today, we're going to go ahead and get into a topic called stakeholder mapping. But before we do that, I want to set up a little bit of context, of course, just to give you an idea of kind of where this comes from, how this kind of fits into this idea of teamwork and leadership and so on. And as many of you might know, Humanergy has done a lot of work over the years studying teams, and a lot of that work is represented in this book, What Great Teams Do Great. And one of the things that the best teammates do and the best teams do is they spend most of their time trying to focus their choices on the greater good and limit the choices they make that are coming from our self-focus. So that, and that's important work, right? That is an important quality of a great team, is that those teammates are really wired to try to amp up those choices for the greater good. And that doesn't happen overnight necessarily. We know that to do that work, to focus on the greater good, oftentimes the best teams focus on setting up well. This is different than planning work and doing work. This actually comes together around focusing on what are the critical things we need to be aware of? What are the critical things that we need to focus on and support each other on? Because if we do that work, it's going to influence the planning and the doing in more productive and supportive ways. And so that's an important piece. And so when it comes to this work of stakeholder mapping, it fits within this setup box very much. And one of the stories that we can kind of point to for Humanergy is that we've had a 25 plus year history now with Michigan State University. We've supported their executive MBA program. And this is a program that brings over 100 students together every summer, and they start this 20-month journey together. And in that 20-month journey together, they basically have a team environment, meaning those 100 plus students are broken into teams of 4 to 5 to 6 people. And they have to spend 20 months together trying to figure out how to complete all their academic modules. Meanwhile, many of them are having kids. Some of them are moving locations. Some of them are switching jobs. It's a very high pressure environment. And so what we do in their orientation setting is over 2 days, we actually help them put heads down and focus on their setup. And literally, we're having conversations around their setup and how they're doing this work well. And in fact, one of the things that we ask them to do is be really clear around that group, around that team, is what does success look like to each of them? And so all 4 or all 5 or all 6 start to reveal what success looks like for them over that 20-month journey. And they start to realize pretty quickly what they hold in common and what might be in conflict of one another. And they have the conversations early and often to figure out how are we going to focus most of our time and energy to support each other on what's common, what we hold together, and try to limit those instances where those competing interests or conflicting interests might get in the way. And that really is kind of the beauty of this stakeholder mapping that we're going to talk about, because what that process I just described is really at the heart of stakeholder mapping. And whether we do that in a team environment where we actually reveal those things to each other real time, or whether we start to do that work independently on a piece of paper, it's a really important process to get our heads around, because it gets ourselves out of our own heads and into the heads of other people that we're dependent on to be successful. And so here on the screen is kind of a visual orientation to what stakeholder mapping can often look like. We can put ourselves in the center, for instance, and kind of start to articulate what results are most important to us. And then we start to form our stakeholders around us and start to think about what does success look like through their eyes, knowing that it probably looks a little different than our version, than our picture. So I'll walk you through a few more things here. whether it's a kind of a visual orientation on the left-hand screen or more linear orientation, that really doesn't matter. But I realize some of y'all have different preferences for how you might list this out or actually practically do this work. You can also use sticky notes, right? So you could think about a team environment. You can use sticky notes to kind of make this come to life and kind of post things on the walls for other people to see or kind of at your desk and so on. Again, it doesn't really matter the method or the technology you use to kind of articulate this, but the important thing is it forces you to do the thinking about what's most important to myself and other people around me. And so here are six steps that I'd recommend taking to be able to create this stakeholder map well. And in fact, all six of these steps, if you do take your phone and you grab the QR code right now, you'll be taken to a PDF that you can kind of download, that you can print and so on your desktops and take care of it that way. But the first step is to identify yourself or your team in kind of that center box. And then, of course, you'll identify people around you that have a stake in your success, creating kind of new bubbles or new rows for those people or those teams. Then we invite you to step into those stakeholders' shoes, really try to get into their shoes and through their eyes, try to define how they would define whether or not you've been successful. What results really matter to them? And we'd encourage you to try to really get specific around the 2 to 3 results that they need to see from you. And these are the things that are important to them. They're WIFMs. They're what's in it for me's. These are the things that we want to be aware of because it might look a little bit different than what's in it for me, right? At the center of that stakeholder map. And as we look at the entire stakeholder map and we identify all the WIFMs around us, can we start to see the 3 to 5 results that really start to summarize all the needs of the stakeholders, or at least the most needs as possible. It starts to give us some clarity around what needs are kind of most important for the greater good of the group, so to speak. And that's a really important kind of clue or really important piece of data to pay attention to. Once we've kind of been able to identify those 3 to 5 kind of collective needs across the entire stakeholder map, can we then take steps 5 and 6 and define the results with clear metrics and targets, try to get really clear on what some of those measurables are going to look like, and make sure we're clear on the timeline required, right? How urgent or how much of a priority some of these things are going to be to different stakeholder groups and so on, so we can kind of dial in the urgency that's required to do this work well. And this really becomes the foundation of our success, kind of how we start to see the world beyond our own eyes. It expands our own reality to give us a really strong foundation of what the greater good looks like. So that's kind of the basics of what we're getting at here. This isn't necessarily a complex set of steps, but the thinking actually can be really complex. And oftentimes, if we don't know what success looks like to a stakeholder, that's an invitation for us to go have a conversation. That's an important clue that we actually need to seek clarity with that stakeholder before making assumptions, or else we might be acting on the wrong assumptions and actually spending our time in the wrong directions without having that clarity. Okay, again, that QR code can give you some these steps, right, and make these available to you at your desktop if you grab that. But I'm going to move us forward here, and I can put this back on the screen if you need to. Just let us know in the chat. And this is an example, for instance, of what this might look like to a leader. So this is actually kind of an example where if you have an HR leader, for instance, where they're trying to lift up a performance management system, a performance management process in their organization, they would start to see how all these stakeholders form around them, right? And in the middle box, they kind of list the criteria that are going to be most important to them. Making sure they have clarity around, you know, this is a replicable across all departments. This is going to give each employee kind of clarity around goals and expectations, of course. That's what you'd expect out of a performance management process. But I think what's interesting around this one, right, is really thinking about how this is a kind of a recruitment competitive advantage over time. You know, this is an important criteria to this leader. They wanted this performance management process not just to be something that kind of helps people check the box, but it's something that really helps people develop across their career, and it can become an advantage to retain and recruit their people. And so again, those are important to them, and it's going to look different for those various stakeholders, but how can they then crystallize that into the 3 to 5 needs that are going to really be well suited for the collective group here? And then once you have that map in place, it gives you an opportunity to ask some really great questions, right? What are your observations? What are you seeing across that entire map? What am I learning? Where do I have high trust with certain stakeholders? Where might I have low trust? Where might I have to spend some time and energy building trust with certain stakeholders to be successful, to make sure I can follow through on what's important to them and what's important to the entire group? With this larger reality in front of me, what needs to get done? I can start to prioritize. I can really start to figure out where I need to put some energy, right? To, again, focus on the largest collective need for the group. And this is where it starts to really help us dial in on the types of conversations and decision-making we need to go after, how we can start to think about where we spend energy to really satisfy the greatest number of needs, where I can seek win-win resolutions and be aware of some of those ways to negotiate for a win-win, how I can help keep certain stakeholders in the loop so that they can be aware of progress or issues that pop up and not be left in the dark. Again, because we're all connected to this reality. So these are important things for me to keep aware of that I can dial in my leadership and succeed and help everyone succeed with greater influence and credibility. And what we often invite people to do is once they've actually built this out, once they've actually kind of created this stakeholder map, it becomes really helpful to share this reality with other stakeholders. Help them refine it. Help them clarify maybe my understanding if I had some gaps in what was important to certain stakeholders. Those revisions can be really helpful. This can give me some ideas for how to prioritize, again, future conversations, making win-win the standard for the way we go about solving issues together, and making sure I'm aware of where I need to share progress and check in with various stakeholders across that map. And so a couple thoughts, too, on when this becomes really useful to use. Think about starting a new role, for instance. My boss and I, we're a team. And so are we clear about what's important to each one of us? Am I clear jumping into a new role around the other stakeholders I need to depend on to be successful? And can I start that stakeholder map process to really get clear on what's going to help me be successful in that role? And so I think this is an important thing that we can step into when we're starting a new role. If we're leading a new project or initiative, how do we start to think about that work with the stakeholders we're connected to? If you think about some of the ways that the world has changed around us recently, right? Certainly when the pandemic shifted, that shifted a lot of things for various stakeholders, right? So are we using that mapping to be clear on the new reality in front of us for ourselves and others and how we might have to readjust some of our priorities? Those are all really good indicators that this is a time to really get clear on the needs of our stakeholders as ourselves and do the work to meet the needs of to meet the greatest needs of that collective group. And the last piece I'd offer too is even this is useful outside of our work setting. I had a client who was sharing how they just went on the best vacation they've taken this past summer. And they described them before they went on that vacation, they had their entire family, each individual list out what they would prioritize, what they wanted to get out of that time together. And that planning, that clarity around everyone around the table allowed them to really prioritize the types of scheduling they need to put into that trip so that they could, again, meet the greatest needs of the collective family. And it really set that family up for a great trip just because they are aware of that ahead of time and not trying to overemphasize too many things for one person while the other three or four people weren't getting a chance to do the things they wanted to do on that trip. It was a great example of us seeing an opportunity for the greater good to come together and then making choices that serve that greater good. And the last thing I want to mention here, just to share as an example, is this is more of an organizational type of example here, where if you think about the airline industry and how much it's matured over the last 25 years, it's really come a long way. Post 9/11, if you think about kind of the early part of this century, when those events unfolded, what became really important to airlines was get back to the basics. The gate agents, for instance, were really focused on reliability, making sure that that plane was taking off on time. The folks below the wing, so to speak, on the upper right, were really focused, again, on reliability, making sure that plane got off the ground on time. And in some ways, if you think about the cabin experience, a lot of that work was focused on safety. Those are the important metrics for those folks kind of running and operating that airline. And And that was really helpful, right? As we stepped into seats, as we stepped into the cabin experience as customers, we were expecting safety. That was an important part of our experience getting back on those planes. And therefore, those are the metrics that were really important to airlines at the time. As now we've kind of come along the way over the last 25 years, though, customers have expected more than just reliability and safety. We've expected a customer experience, right? We've expected to be catered to a little bit more. And therefore, airlines have had to go after that and try to attract customers through satisfaction and through loyalty and so on. And so these metrics have shifted. If safety and reliability were the only things on airlines' radars, they would be missing a large part of their stakeholder group, and they'd be missing opportunities to really go after that work, go after that business by actually attracting customers with not only safety and reliability, but also cleanliness. We know that sanitation is probably more and more of a priority for customers today, and also making sure that they're getting the experiences that keep them coming back, that keep them rewarded and keep them earning that business. And so these stakeholder maps are really important for organizations to consider as well, for not only the various kind of functions or departments within that group, but also what can we learn about our customers? What can we learn about what's important to them? And how does that then help us measure success a little bit differently and make tougher decisions around what our business needs to be doing to go after that business well?
That was the Humanergy Leadership Podcast. My name's David Wheatley. For further information about Humanergy, go to humanergy.com or check out our latest book, What Great Teams Do Great, from all good bookstores. Have a good one. Stay healthy.